Welcome to another special episode of Atlanta's only pro-business radio talk show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Buckhead, inside the Business Radio X studios.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jeff Sham with the Sales Influences Radio Show. And I'm looking for a great afternoon today because we have a phenomenal guest, Steve Cadley. I can't think of a better way to kick off the show than someone who's been in the sales arena for many years and actually has a coaching business now. But more importantly, this is the gentleman, folks, for any of you out there in the Twitterverse, that turned me into a proverbial Twitterholic. I went to one of his sessions about 6 years ago now, and he taught me some of the tools. And I can forever grateful for that, Steve.
Yeah, no worries.
It's really a pleasure having you here today and for you to share your expertise. So without further ado, Steve, would you inform the listeners as to who you are, what you do, your background? That it's really impressive.
So I was born in 19... I'm not going to go back that far.
Okay.
Jeff, it's great to be here and on Business Radio X and your first inaugural show. I'm very excited, very honored to be here. Sales Influencer, right? Is it Sales Influencer?
Sales Influencers Radio.
Sales Influencers Radio.
Right.
.com yet, or we don't
yes,
have the .com?
Yes.
All right, .com, so make sure we get that out there. So I've been on... how did I start? So I've been in sales and sales, technology sales for many, many years. Started my career selling politicians, actually. Now to date myself, I started with ran Gary Hart's campaign up in the Northeast, well before Monkey Business. Monkey Business kind of changed everything for us. Well, for me, anyway.
Right.
And then went on to AT&T and sold technology, long distance, back when there was such a thing as long distance. Remember, now again, we're dating ourselves, right?
Absolutely.
And then moved on to really just technology, internet, and then went through the startup.com world. And then that exploded in the late 90s. When that did, I went back to school, got a master's in organizational psychology, and which is really around the study of how organizations do change, or better said, how they resist change, right? Because we as humans don't do change well, as much as we say we like change. And then went on to hang out a shingle to do my own consulting around sales performance and how do I help organizations get more effective at selling. And that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years, I think. And was really studying social media back when we met around, you know, how it was changing social behavior, social norms. Because if we think about that, it's as we were getting into this socially integrated world, I was curious around how it's going to impact how people buy, which is at the cause of all, you know, people sell, right? You sell to how people buy is really ideally where you want to be. So I was studying that, and then I was starting to run programs. I was experimenting with Twitter and LinkedIn well before I think a lot of people knew what they were, and started running programs, and that's when we met, Jeff. And as they say, you know, I was the teacher then. Now you're now I'm the student. I mean, I don't have near as many followers on Twitter as you have, so I'm curious to talk a little bit more about that.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's been good for me. Hopefully, it's still good for you, Steve, with regard to client acquisition and awareness and everything else for your business.
Yeah, I think it's more awareness, and we'll talk a little bit more on social media because I have some ideas and just some of the things I'm hearing from my clients. But really, my work now is really around sales organizations, more B2B, and how do all of these things fit together. Work with Miller Heiman, which is now Miller Heiman Global, MHI Global, which is a conglomeration of the original Miller Heiman, which is the gold standard in business-to-business sales methodology, sales training. They have acquired Huthwaite, which is spin selling, and Achieve Global. Achieve Global is more has a lot of leadership stuff. They also have the old professional selling skills, selling methodology. So these are really now become the 500-pound gorilla in the whole sales performance space. So work with them a lot, but really it's the leveraging my change management skills and background to help organizations really transform the way they go about working with their clients. How do they help their clients buy from them? And we talked so many years around selling. It's not about, it is selling, but it's really how do we help our customers buy from us? And that's really where the rubber hits the road. That's really what we're looking at. And social media plays a part of that. Now we have the whole new CRM, Salesforce.com. I do a lot of work with Salesforce.com. and, you know, the whole social enterprise. What does this all mean? And so this is it's a really interesting time as we are in this the world of sales, because, you know, just the world's changing. Technology is changing how we do things. I mean, think about when you were, because you were, I think you mentioned you were up in your alma mater this weekend.
Right, correct, yes.
So what were you doing up there?
Actually, I was talking on using LinkedIn and Twitter and that for the job search, the Alumni Association.
And when you were going to school, did you ever hear of things like LinkedIn or
Twitter? Yeah, absolutely not. No, not at all. Exactly. None of these things. I
mean, the internet
we
didn't
exist. We were
lucky
if we had card punch machines back then. We had to take them. As a matter of fact, we had to take them at night, put them in so that they could process it overnight, and you get back a report the next day as to how you...
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, things are changing. They change every day. That's what's so exciting about this whole business.
And it really is. And then you think about how do you sell in this world? I mean, there's the one constant. That's one of the reasons I went back to school to get that around change, study change, is because that's the one constant in our world. And if you think about salespeople, we are change agents, right? We're asking our clients, our buyers, our prospects, to change the way they do something, whether it's the way they buy groceries, whether it's the way they dial a phone, or what type of phone they used. So we're all agents of change. So we have to manage and understand how do our customers react to change? And that's why I studied change. So,
yeah, I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal what's going on now. And one of the things that disturbs me though, Steve, maybe we can talk about this a little bit later, but now, I'd like to make the point is you hear a lot of these social media pundits, they're saying that, the salespeople are going the way of the buggy whip or the dinosaurs. Okay. And the B2B area. I mean, in some respects, I think it's the sales cycle. It's moved further down the food chain. But I doubt you're ever going to see the complete end of B2B salespeople as we know.
I absolutely agree. You know, there was a big move on, you know, with the automation, right? You know, remember the Salesforce automation craze of the 80s? And, you know, where you had... sales technologies and other companies that were coming out with the first laptops that were trying to automate the sales process. And they, you know, went up and down. And then I used ACT as a Salesforce automation tool, which is really a contact manager, and migrated. Now I work with CRMs and do a lot of research there. And Salesforce.com is leading the pack. You know, I'm a consulting partner with them. They consistently are reinventing themselves, and it is not the panacea as much as Salesforce, as much as I love it, and I'm an evangelist for it. It's not a panacea. It doesn't fix everything. It does not automate the sales process. The B2B salesperson is far from, a endangered species, shall we say. They are not. You can't automate the process. People still buy from people.
Correct.
Now, what we are seeing is the change in what the responsibility of the seller is these days. We got to think about, you know, that our buyers can have all kinds of information from the internet. They can do the research. They can go to Wikipedia. They can learn about these things. And so really what we do is our responsibility is to really help them understand the nitty gritty. We have to, you know, the new selling acumen is really business acumen. We need to understand our customers' business better than perhaps they do to a certain extent. What are the threats to their business? How do we help equip the sellers to be able to solve the problems that their customers may not necessarily be aware of? And point those out. The day of being a walking brochure, coming in and showing up and telling you all about my product because then you're going to want it because I told you how wonderful it was, are gone. That doesn't exist anymore. We have to, you know, the idea of being more consultative is kind of tongue-in-cheek as it is, but it's really, that's the nature of the beast today. We have to be really understanding their business, understanding how our solution, our product, is going to make their life easier, or is going to help their company grow revenues, or it's going to help their company drive costs out, whatever that may be. That's really the responsibility of the salespeople these days. And I, you know, the idea that you can do that over social media, I think it can increase your awareness. I mean, look at you. If we think about Jeff, how many followers do you have on Twitter?
313,000.
No, thanks. Be shy on that. That's nice. I have 13,000, so you got me by 300. But, you know, and besides, size doesn't matter, Jeff,
no,
as they say.
No,
you know.
No.
But it increases awareness. And for me, that's really what it was. I can't not convince somebody in 140 characters to buy my product. But it gives me credibility in certain circles. Not every organization is playing on Twitter or using Twitter. And in some cases, they look at it and they gawk. I mean, what is that? I don't have time for that. It's a waste of time. And, you know, we've seen the cycle. So we first worked together on looking at Twitter, LinkedIn, and so on. You know, I think at that time here in Atlanta, we had Career Builder. We had Monster. I don't think it was here in Atlanta, but Monster.com. Those are the places where you went to look for jobs. If we look at the metamorphosis of LinkedIn, LinkedIn is the de facto organization that you go to look for a job. It's Career Builders out there, but they're not, they're a shadow of what they were.
You're absolutely right.
They have a completely different business model. I'm not even sure if Monster's still around.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's obviously they're not having a big presence the way they used to. So yeah, you're right. Change is everything, but I think the social media, social selling it's not killing the B2B salesperson. That requirement always be needed.
But. Well, I think what you see, there's so much an emphasis on content marketing, Steve, for the sales process. And to be quite honest with you, I mean, as someone who publishes a tremendous amount of content, both from a curation, from a writing perspective, I just see there's just too much of it out there.
Yeah.
It's people are bombarded with content nowadays. There's no way they can consume it all. So the salesperson going out there and seeing someone face-to-face, establishing those relationships, I think has a competitive advantage over some company that's doing nothing but content marketing with regards to trying to reach the buyers.
Absolutely. I think, because here's the other thing too, is that, you know, if you look at people in today, I think this is where social media, and this is a theory that I have, and I haven't tested it, which is around the idea of, you know, people that are willing to buy, out of 100%, if you look at the people that are willing to buy something, where they're in the market for something, it's 2%. If you have a product that you want to sell, it's 2% of the people out there in the world are ready to buy a product, all right, that maybe you offer, all right? So what about those other 98% of the people out there? You know, you think about advertising and on TV. Not that that's still being used, but, you know, it is still being used and expensive. I go on and I buy an ad to sell a car. Well, I'm not in the market for a car. I think maybe the 5% of the population at any given time might be in the market for a car. So they're spending a lot of dollars to get to that 5%. We think about that, it gets even less for kind of niche products, or products that are new type products that I don't even know I need. All right. And arguably I don't need because I'm doing fine without them. So social media, the marketing and using those tools to make people aware of my products and that may have an interest in buying them is 2%. So I'm putting all this content out there that isn't necessarily attracting anybody. So maybe hitting 2% that might be interested. And so I think back to your point, the business salesperson, not only getting in front of them, and relationship is still important, but it's really, again, back to the business acumen. You have to understand your customer's business and what are their business drivers and how does my product help them with some of their strategic initiatives.
Yeah, I you cannot ignore the basics of business.
No.
And the sales fundamentals. It all still applies.
Yeah. I mean, I have clients, and it's almost become to a lot of my clients in the business-to-business space and working with the Fortune 1000 type companies. Social media is a necessary evil in a lot of ways, right? And what I mean by that is that they are now having to build social media strategies, but they're using them more from a marketing perspective. And there's always these new apps and new solutions that are saying, hey, you can use this to get all the leads you want. I just don't see them paying the dividends that they're espousing. That's not to say that it won't change over time, as right. we saw about. I mean, 6 years ago, the world has changed.
It's changed completely.
Dramatically.
Yeah.
But I think right now we still have, you know, the vice presidents of sales in a lot of the business-to-business organizations are still in their, you know, the boomers of the world, right? Or the Generation Xers, right?
Correct.
They're in their 40s and 50s. So from that perspective, these are the guys that aren't digital natives. They want to understand it, but they're also intimidated by it. And they don't see how it's being used. And quite honestly, I'm not sure I'm seeing the impact of really closing business. Large deals, I don't think it'll ever have the impact of closing large deals, at least in the short term. Now, I say that now.
It's too complex.
Yeah, it's too complex.
And there are too many people that are actually involved in the buying process, particularly in the B2B space.
So, you know, what I think we'll start to see is social media is a great marketing vehicle. I think it increases awareness, increases credibility based on the content you're putting out there. And being able to leverage that to build that awareness, I think, is great. Then we started to see the introduction of marketing automation. You know, this is in Atlanta. We're the epicenter of marketing automation. We had Pardot acquired by Salesforce, or actually Pardot was acquired by Exactly, which then was acquired
right,
by
correct.
Salesforce.
Yes.
We had LoopFuse. I think they recently got acquired. So we have a lot of, marketing automation players out here. And they are, that's really about content, helping your content get seen. And then when people see it, being able to track that so then you can reach out to them.
So how the clients that you have, though, as far as the marketing automation, what type of adoption rate are you seeing, Steve?
Well, that's interesting. I work around, with that more consulting. So I'm looking at clients that are deploying marketing automation, because marketing automation usually ties in with a CRM. And I'm most commonly I'm seeing it with Salesforce. Hence why Pardot was bought by Salesforce. Is it gets really squarely into, I remember starting with organizations as sales vice president, where I say, hey, good luck, go find your leads. There was no marketing organization per se to speak of. So we had to generate our own leads. Marketing automation now takes a lot of that, and for lack of a better word, automates it, and helps you to generate leads and better qualify them. So I'm not following up on a lot of people that might just be surfing my website or reading a blog post. And we're seeing adoption from the marketing folks, but marketing folks aren't necessarily salespeople. And we're seeing marketing automation kind of overlap, and they're now forcing a piece between marketing and sales. There's traditionally been a little bit of a chasm there and a battle
between the two.
And this is really squarely pushing marketing into sales space and putting sales into marketing space, and they have to play nice together. And so we're seeing adoption from that perspective, but we're still seeing some gnashing of teeth because the whole effort on lead scoring, what steps do they need to do to give it a good lead score becomes a very artful project. There's science to it, but it really becomes the finesse and art of really defining a score.
Yeah, I think one of the points you made there with regard to the difference between marketing and salespeople, I've, again, like yourself, have been in business for many years, and I know some really great salespeople that couldn't do anything in marketing. Yeah, and I know a lot of great marketing people could never be salespeople.
Right.
So I think that a lot of people need to recognize that people have their own skill sets, and they should be recognized for that accordingly within organizations, whether it's a B2B or whatever. And don't fill slots with people who do not have those respective skill sets.
Yeah, but I also think it's focusing something, and this is one of the themes that came out of the whole study that I was doing around social media and the work was there, is that, we've entered a stage. I think the 80s and the 90s bred a lot more of that. The classic sales movie, Glengarry, Glen Ross, right? I mean, coffee's for closers. Alec Baldwin, great line, and something that goes, it's still used today, right? And the ABCs. Everyone remember ABC?
Right.
Right? Always be closing, right? And that's old school. And that's not to say that that's not what we would still want to be doing, but it doesn't work necessarily that way anymore. And so what we're really looking at now is what is the emergence of Salesforce, and I think how it's impacting social media, and how it's changing, I think, the world and cultural norms, is we're moved into a world of collaboration to a level that we've never really seen before. The folks that are growing up, they're living their life. The people that are coming onto the workforce now, they've grown up on Facebook. That changes how they look at the world. Their life is open, and so they used to collaborating with friends and connecting and using these social platforms to collaborate. And we have still a lot of sales leaders that are, shall I say, old school, that aren't digital natives, that collaboration, you know, is kind of a, you know, they talk it, but they don't necessarily walk it yet. And it's a norm that I think is going to be more embraced as we move forward. And I think it's changing the way we actually, I know it's changing my clients. You know, how do we better help organizations collaborate? The ideas of silos. Remember business units?
Right.
We have organizations that have business units. We're seeing those business units are organizations from a larger change perspective are looking at ways and how they can break down those silos. I've been working on that for the last 20 years, 30 years. And now but we're really seeing it because if I'm a salesperson and I have four or five products, but each one of those product managers get compensated differently, I don't want to give up a pricing discount on this product so that I can sell this product because they're not giving it. There's battles that go on internally in a lot of my clients. So how do we get it so we do what's right for the client and bring the best foot forward for the client and not worry about these internal silos? And that's forcing collaboration more and more and to have a larger and larger impact. So I think that's one of the big positives out of growth.
Well, the other thing is the sales funnel has changed completely, I feel, and also the customer experience, the customer journey has changed.
Say more about that. I'm not sure. Okay.
Well, from a standpoint of whereas before, you know, they gather the information at the create the awareness and that at the top, and that would funnel through. Now, and then the salespeople would intercede at each point within the sales journey. Now it's a situation where the buyers, particularly in B2B environment, have all the information, as you alluded to at the outset, and so the B2B salesperson is there at the end. But so what you have to do is you have to have an organizational shift so that they know how to interact at each one of those points within the sales journey or the sales funnel.
Yeah, I think you're right on. And that's, you know what, I don't know if it's changed, Jeff. I think having studied this and worked with Bob Miller, the author of Strategic Selling, brilliant man. And he wrote a book and a methodology called Conceptual Selling, which is all about, you know, preparing for the call and the structure or anatomy of a sales call. And he talked around really something called joint venture, which is, you know, all of our buyers, when we go to meet somebody, they have a solution image. They have an image of what they want to buy. And that image may be less than what our product can do for them. Or it's based on what their experience or their knowledge of this particular industry is. But they have several other things they're worried about. They're not worried about just this one thing. They, you know, perhaps they're a publisher. They're not worried about marketing this book. They're just manufacturing this book. So from that perspective, I may come in and say, you know, there's a whole bunch of different ways that you can publish this book and you can make this book. You can make it digitally. You can make it as a, you know, an e-book. You can do any number of
white
ways.
White paper or whatever.
White paper. Yeah. And they were only thinking about how I'm going to make a binded book. And so we can help expand their solution image. And in that day, and I think that really still exists today, we have to do that more and more because people, you know, the wonderful thing about the internet, Google, and so on, is that I can do all this research and learn all these wonderful things. But if I've been in this world for the better part of 15, 20 years, I've probably learned a little bit more about sales than perhaps a VP of sales that's 30 years old. Because I've experienced it and I've seen it in different things. So I can give different, I can expand his awareness. And that's my responsibility, I think, as a seller. And I think that's a responsibility of sellers today, particularly in the B2B world, because arguably they are experts in their area and their industry, not just on their product, but in their industry, or they should be, so that they can expand that solution image. They can joint venture, as Bob Miller said, moving them from that solution image they have up to changing their bigger picture, making and expanding their awareness around what the bigger problem is or what the bigger solution might be.
You know, I think the personalization and also relationships mean an awful lot still.
Oh, absolutely. Relationships always, I think, because, and you know, and relationship is one of those things I say, green word, right? It means so many different things to different people. The relationship I think of today is about, you have to have credibility. And people buy from people. So they want to see that, you know, you're going to have their back, that you're going to be reliable and you have credibility and that you know your stuff. If I walk in and I interviewed quite a bunch of sales leaders throughout my career, And I've always asked, I've always liked to ask, you know, what is it, if you had a new salesperson coming into the world today, coming into your organization or coming into sales, they decided they want to come into sales, what one piece of advice would you give them? And they consistently said, do your research, know your company. You know, knowing your product, knowing your solution, that's table stakes. I expect you to know that. I expect you to know it cold. What I also expect now in this new world of social media and the Google and Inside View and all the data repositories of information is I expect you to come up and know my business so that you can be able to offer me solutions that I haven't thought of. So I have to expand that. And that is really where the relationship comes in. I have to have the credibility to be able to tell them and share with them. If I don't have that credibility, they're not going to listen to me. I had, there's a new methodology that's very disruptive, and it's not even a methodology, but it's a thought. It's called the Challenger Sales Model, and very interesting, fascinating read based on research around, you know, in today's day of selling, what they basically did, they broke it down into, they did a research project and said, hey, there's five types of sellers these days. The lone wolf, the relationship guy, the challenger, as they said, and I think there's two others that just don't come to mind right now. And they said the best person that you need is a challenger seller. And all right, that's interesting. So what does that really mean? And it really means that you're someone who's actually doing what Bob Miller said 25, 30 years ago, which was, hey, you know what? You need to expand your buying influence's awareness. You have to joint venture. You have to expand their solution image. And basically, they talk about that's the new way of selling, which is the new way is the old way. It's not anything new. It's just recouched in different terms. But here's the challenge. If you think about it, Jeff, if I have a 20-something coming in, if you had a 20-something coming in and telling you how, you know, you should be, you know, using blogs and being able to basically teaching you or challenging you, how's that going to go over?
Not at all.
Well, why not? Why? I'm just curious. I mean, really, why wouldn't?
Well, because, you know, again, people don't want to be told what they should be doing or whatever.
Right. Especially because if someone 20-something, you know, I've forgotten more than, you know.
Right. Correct.
You know, I was selling before you, while you were still in diapers. I was probably, you know. You know, whatever. So that's so you know that's kind of the relationship's important, but also credibility. And so if I don't have a relationship with you, but I've earned the credibility by using my awareness campaigns, i.e., social media, I've built myself a brand, a reputation, then that's going to help overcome the lack of relationship. Because we know that even in you know, and this is a hot topic, relationship is always important, but it's not as important as we hear everyone say it is. And what I mean by that is when we hit the 2008, 2009, right, the 2010, those wonderful years here in the U.S. That kind of reset everyone's evaluation. Business was great for me in the world of sales performance, probably more so in 2011, 2012. 2010, everybody was trying to save their way into growth. And it's like that didn't work that much. But what happened was is they realized in those years that their salespeople weren't selling. They were taking orders, and they had great relationships, and those relationships allowed them to take orders. But all of a sudden, when this economy had, and the company, those relationships they had with people, even the CEOs were saying, "Hey, I don't have any money. I got to save money. I'm not going to buy anything from you."
Correct.
So the relationship didn't mean anything. I mean, it meant something. It was, "Hey, I'm still your friend. I'll still see you and have you take me out for lunch, but I'm not buying anything. I don't have any money." That's when the idea of you have to expand people's awareness. Here's how this is going to help you save money. Then we really started getting into ROI. So the relationship kept, you know, opened the door and got things cooking. And I'd say in the social media days, now credibility and reputation helps open the door. But ultimately, it's going to be able to, you have to be able to challenge people and be able to expand their awareness, which goes right back to Bob Miller said it so many years ago, you have to joint venture. You have to expand people's consciousness.
And the complexity of the salespeople now, they're not the same breed as they were several years ago from a standpoint of the intellect that's required, the amount of knowledge that they have to consume and be able to regurgitate or whatever at a moment's notice is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, think about it. I mean, when we back in the day, we could know our products cold and that would be enough. And now it's not. You have to have business acumen. You have to know what's happening in your buying influences and your customers' industry. What are the pressures that are facing that they're facing? And if you don't understand that, you know, you're not going to be able to have, maybe you'll get that first appointment, but if you can't really tell them how your product or your solution, or even how you're going to help them address what's happening in the industry,
Well, also what I experienced, you probably experienced this as well, in selling, you know, large ticket items or high dollar value programs, you had to touch a number of different people within an organization.
Yeah.
So you have to have the ability as a salesperson now to be able to converse with those people, whether a PhD, whether it's someone that is in quality, so many different aspects of the sale. Because of the fact that, you know, at least in a B2B environment, I think there's a great deal of reluctance for any one individual to make a decision. They look at collective decision making because of the fact that they're afraid to put their neck out. If they make the wrong decision, then their job is history.
I think it's probably more so now. I think you're right on, Jeff. And I think it's also, we see, you know, the basic, you know, from strategic selling, you know, Miller Heiman, it's, you know, I'm an evangelist in that regard to a certain extent, because, but it's simple. It works. It's withstood the test of time, been around 35 years. In that model, it talks about buying influences. You know, there's always going to be more than just one person that makes a decision. And what we need to do as salespeople is we need to understand who all those players are in a new organization and what level of influence they have. You know, who is the economic buying influence? Who is the going to be using this service? Who's going to be, you know, technical? You know, we have to deal with purchasing. And do I have a coach inside the organization? And I have to understand all that. So, yeah, absolutely. They have to. And they have to be able to speak the language of each one of those buying influences. Just as you said, talking in, if I go and walk into a PhD, you know, you're going to have to be able to hold your own.
Correct. And the thing is, this is where tools like LinkedIn and that come into play.
Oh,
because the fact that you have the ability to identify who those people are, who are the influencers, who are the advocates and others within an organization that can help you from a sales perspective.
Yeah, I think, well, you can theorize, right?
Correct.
And that's how I've used it. I've actually theorized to use that. And actually, I've used LinkedIn to do additional research to get that the nuances that you don't get out of LinkedIn, you don't get out of you know, the Hoover's you know, information on the companies or even the company's websites. You know, I had a prospect, this is back around 4 years ago, I was trying to get into, and I needed to know more about their business. And it was a large Fortune, call it Fortune 5000 space. And I was trying to get, what were their strategic initiatives? Because if I understand an organization's strategic initiatives, which arguably aren't always on their webpage, I can align my solutions to how I'm going to be able to support their strategic initiatives. And those strategic initiatives traditionally come from on high. So I reached out to several employees just to see if I'd be willing to get some coaching from them on LinkedIn. Didn't have a response. Surprisingly, I reached out to several that had left the organization and were new organizations, and reached out and said, hey, be willing to spend a little bit of time with me. Out of the four that I reached out to, I got responses back from three, and I had two conversations. One gave me a great deal of insight, but he was not that high in the organization. The other one was a former VP of strategy, and he shared with me the strategy deck from the year before. And, I mean, it was dated, was public information at this point, so it wasn't doing anything untoward, but it was, you know, it was like, whoa, that's interesting. So now I had internal intelligence that I could actually use and speak the organization's language to be able to share, here's how I'd be able to help you. And I could talk about the strategic initiatives from the year before. And how do they work out?
I think you ran away the secret sauce here, Steve. Well, that's, as far as sales. That's something I had never thought of, quite honest with you, with regard to former employees.
Absolutely.
Through LinkedIn, where you don't have any connection whatsoever, and reaching out to them, having a cup of coffee, and getting as much information.
I saw you write notes on that one, too. So
yeah. No, I mean, people do that from a job-seeking perspective, but I never thought of it from a sales perspective, going out and doing like what you've done.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And it's rich. And because a lot of times, traditionally what I'll do, and that VP of strategy was an anomaly, and more often than not, I'll reach out to other salespeople. Because we're all in sales, particularly if you have that on your title. And we know the world of sales. It's not easy, right?
It's tough.
So if I'm working with a compadre who's also in sales, you know, we can compare notes. And they're willing to and I've gotten this on several occasions, you know, several of my clients. And I said, I reached out to the sales leaders or some sales managers and said, I'm trying to do some business with you guys. I wonder if you could help me how you, understand how your organization buys. And several times they said, oh, dude, you do not want, I have no idea how this organization buys. This is, good luck with that. Because I know how my customers buy, but I have no idea how we buy. And these are employees of the organizations. So it's always fascinating from that perspective. But yeah, so it's, you know, social media is, you know, for actually doing sales, making things happen, Mets, all right, in my book. Brand awareness, marketing, great. I think it's very powerful. For research, I think it's very powerful. And again, that goes back to you have to have done the research on the client to earn that credibility and to make things happen. Because that's the world that we live in. If you haven't done that research, you know, and that's to a T, you know, what all the sales leaders that I've interviewed over the years have said is that do your research, be prepared, bring me something different that no one else has brought to me.
What do you think, if within the companies that you're working with, what is the most challenging thing that the sales manage, the VPs of sales, or what do they face with right now?
Yeah, it's great. You know, there's so many, and they're come to mind right now. I'm making sure I get out of my own way because I know what my, I know what challenges they want. I want them to solve, and I want them to solve them with me. So that's not. I'm trying to get my sales hat off of, right? I think right now I have several clients that are dealing with pushing that cycle. If we think about every sales organization has that proverbial bell curve, right? That middle. So you have your top performers, and then you have your bottom performers in the sales organization. But it's that middle part of the organization that is the one that the VPs of sales and the sales leaders wrestle with the most. How do I get these good performers to be top performers? If I can just move the bulk of my sales force to be, if I can improve their sales force, everyone achieving quota by a factor of 5%, you know, that's going to make my number for the year, or I'm going to have, 10%, 20% growth just by making sure that I have 5% more of my salespeople making quota, especially for a large organization. So a lot of what I'm working with a lot of clients now is around VPs of sales, is around the frontline sales manager. And, I'm working with an organization, actually. I brought a book here for you, Jeff, too. So I got bearing gifts here.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Crack the sales management code.
Cracking the sales management code. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Jason Jordan and Michelle Vanzana, dear friends of mine, and we have been working, I've been working with them on this methodology. It's really a frontline sales manager methodology, and that's right now. Even before I started working with them, I sought them out because it was the biggest challenge that I'm seeing in organizations today is, I hate to say it, but it's a leadership issue. And after 15 years of selling and working with salespeople and training salespeople up and trying to get them to get adoption, that's only a part of it. It's the tip of the iceberg in doing the training and giving them the methodology. Whatever it is, whether it's spin selling, Miller-Hyman, whatever it might be. At the end of the day, it's really the frontline sales managers that are going to be the ones that coach and reinforce this language. If they don't, then this organization will buy a methodology, buy training, and spend lots of money on it, and it's just good money after bad.
So how do you train for leadership? That's a real quandary.
Well, we see leadership development. We have coaching models. All over the place. This is really where we have to then develop them, because here's what happens. Here's what happens in corporate America today. Where do most of the sales managers come from?
From the ranks.
From the ranks, from the salespeople. Right, and traditionally, correct. Not just the salespeople.
Right.
Who was that sales? Who's that? What type of salesperson has been promoted to sales manager?
Basically, it's an AE. That's
AE. But yeah. Which one? The bottom, the rank, or the top?
The top.
It's usually the top salesperson, correct. Right?
Top salesperson, right?
Top salesperson. Right. They've been successful as an individual contributor. I said, you know what? Obviously, you're going to make a good sales manager. That logic is flawed, but that's what usually happens. And so you turn them into a sales manager. You don't give them any training and say, go forth and conquer. And now here you have a top performer salesperson who is now going to be, is going to now adopted a team of people that he needs to manage.
And most of them don't like to manage people.
And they don't like to manage, or they don't know how to manage people.
Yeah, true.
But they're used to being successful, and they're not going to let this team of people that may not be high performers like themselves, bring them down. They're going to be a top performer as a sales manager because they're used to being a top performer as a salesperson. So they're going to become what? They become the super salesperson. They go out and they start to work the deals for their salespeople. And they think that's coaching. But they think it's modeling. It's not. It's really they're enabling, basically, they're enabling them to be less than, right?
Correct.
They're not coaching
them,
they're not developing them. Because they go out, they take over the call, they make it happen.
They're still tethered.
Oh, yeah. And so then it's learned helplessness to a certain extent. So by doing everything for your salespeople, you basically make them more reliant on you as a salesperson. And so really this methodology goes into really how do we change that? How do we actually help enhance what they're doing? And so that as a frontline sales manager, you can truly coach. I mean, think back. You've been in sales a long time.
Right, correct.
So do you remember the most impactful sales manager for you?
Yes.
Why?
Well, I think he helped set direction with regard to train me and give me the independence to go out there and do it.
Yeah. And so what was one event? Do you remember any one event from him?
Well, basically taking me out in the sales calls.
Yeah.
And demonstrating the product. The sales techniques that he was using to sell the product, and then pretty much telling me this,
Go forth and conquer. And then did you do it exactly his way, or did you crash and burn a couple times?
I didn't really crash and burn. I mean, I was able to use what he...
crash and burn. All right, so he's pretty proud of himself, right?
You know? No, I was able to take what he had taught me and use it to sell. And at that time, it was about $7,000 moisture analyzers.
So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you learn from that. You saw him do it in practice,
right,
and then you practiced. But you practiced.
Yes, absolutely.
He didn't do it for you.
No, not at all.
I mean, I guess it was. I'll use my example too in that regard. Is that they modeled it and then they let you. You know, in my case, I was floundering miserably in a call, and Glenn Wilson. If you're out there, Glenn, it's. I remember this day. Absolutely, the call went absolutely sideways. I crashed and burned. I think we were escorted out of the building. And Glenn didn't try and rescue me. He didn't try and save it. And he could have. He had the knowledge and the relationship and skill to do that. But it was one of those where we debriefed afterwards. And he goes, yeah, I could have done that, but that's not my job. My job is to coach you. And then we debrief. And that was still the biggest learning lesson I ever had. And that's what this book talks to, is how do we get out of the way of our salespeople and truly develop them so that they can have that capability. And then ultimately move that bell curve. So we move those middle performers into being just a little bit better. Because a little bit better of a larger mass is a huge impact. As opposed to where we spend most of the time as sales managers, we spend it on the bottom and maybe a little bit with the top. We don't spend a lot of time with the middle. And what this talks about is how do we make the biggest impact.
And the biggest impact is going to come from working with the people in the middle there.
Yeah, working with the numbers, right?
Right,
working
correct.
With the people are. Because they have potentially, the top of the bell curve, those are the ones that really want to be good. They just don't know what to do. And so it's really about getting specific on the task, connecting how what they do to the overall goals. That's kind of the biggest challenge I'm seeing.
Really? And they're really struggling with it. Are they struggling with the complexity, though, of the sales process right now? Due to the abundance of information that's out there, and
I think it's the complexity of some are and some aren't. I think the change of their client base is really what I see happening. How am I doing that, and how am I helping? How's the organization? How am I a salesperson or my buyers really? How am I going to be dealing with them based on everything that's happening in their world? And being able to increase business acumen. And that's the one that another challenge is the complexity of the world that we live in. I mean, the changes happening so quickly. I have to know my products. That's a given, like I said earlier. But it's really about being able to help them understand what's the mindset. Because I think you mentioned it earlier, is that the decision-making process has moved upstream dramatically. 4 years ago, I could say that I could have, the VP of sales would be able to do, a project with me because he or she had the budget authority to do it. During the the 2010, 2011 timeframe, we saw a lot of that decision authority move. And it went up not just to the chief sales officer, but it moved to the CFO and the CEO. And in some cases, it moved to the board before they were able to make that. So we see the decision-making change. And what I see is, again, this goes to the frontline sales manager, it's about increasing and coaching your people to increase and understand the business act, the business that your customers and prospects are in, and being able to speak to how what your solution can do can expand and help them move up the food chain.
Now, I was going to ask you, with regard to data, how I noticed they're spending a tremendous amount of time in the sales management capacity analyzing data now like there's no tomorrow. And yeah. What is – yeah. So they become a lot of them have become number crunches in a lot of respects.
That's, that's the outgrowth of the CRM, right?
Right.
I mean, you have more data than you know what to do with. And we talk about on that is, you know, most of the data that are, is – that's being measured, most of the metrics that are out there around results, revenue, you know, market share, those are what I would say results, and they're all lagging indicators. You know, I can't really manage those because it's already happened. By the time I look at this number, it's measured, it's I can't manage that. So I have to really get down to, you know, what are the activities that I'm going to be looking at and what's going to be most key. You know, there is the Covey Group,
right.
Covey Institute. You know, Steve Covey, you know, may rest in peace, brilliant man. And the whole Covey Institute does a lot of really good stuff. They have one book and one methodology that I really like. It's the Four Disciplines of Execution. And it really speaks to making it simple. What are those key things that you need to manage, not measure, but manage, that are going to make the biggest impact in your organization? More often than not, we say we got to look at, we have to manage measure, we have to manage market share. That you can't manage that. You can measure it, but how do you measure market share? Well, that means that I'm going to have to go and to manage market share, I'm going to have to touch all of my customers that have less than 20%, you know, of my services in place or whatever that number might be. However you measure market share, then we're starting to get more specific, and I have to get the four disciplines of execution talk about getting more specific, as does cracking the sales management code. It really talks about getting specific to, I got to tell my salespeople, what are those activities that are going to connect on up to the results that the organization is looking for? And so that's really where we get into, you know, the metrics, because right now people are getting swarmed or killed with all the data.
Now, quick question. Now, are you seeing them? One of the things that really bothers me about this whole social media arena is I see everything is so focused with customer acquisition, Steve, and not customer retention. You see very few of the social media pundits out there talking about retention or loyalty or what have you. It's all about getting this new customer, this new customer, this new customer. What do we have to do in that regard? Now, from a sales management perspective, have you seen them with a, so that they're actually creating, again, getting back to the silos, but an acquisition type of strategy, and also existing customer retention type of strategy as well?
Well, you know, I think it's the, from a service perspective, and I go back to what Salesforce has been doing around the whole service cloud. And I think back to the model around social media. Comcast is a perfect example of really how they're using social media for the for improving customer service and customer retention. But you're right. Most people are talking about using social media to get that new customer, not necessarily how you use it for service or support. And, you know, Comcast, it's actually, if you call the 800 number, you know, you have those endless number of prompts.
Correct. Which is really annoying.
If you tweet a concern, you'll get a faster response on Twitter than you will than if you dial up. So they were leading the charge on that. And you're starting to see a whole bunch of, I won't say the pundits, but a whole bunch of more thought leaders around how you use social media and Facebook and so on to be able to really improve the customer experience. And that's really what we're talking about, customer service, customer experience after they after they've already bought. You know, and there's, speaking of Facebook, there was one number that came out that I thought was really interesting was, I think it's up to 67 or 72% of people before they make a purchase, and it used to be more retail, but now it's moved into the B2B space. This 67 or 72, somewhere in that range, people will go out and they will look at and get the input of their friends before they actually make an acquisition or make the purchase. You know, made sense, retail made sense around cars and so on of that nature. But now we're seeing it move into the business-to-business space. And again, it goes back to an outgrowth of this whole social media platform around sales is collaboration. And sales organizations that do not adopt this idea of collaborating internally, they're going to fall by the wayside.
So you talk about collaboration. How about some tools out there? What are you seeing them using as far as collaboration tools internally? Any tools that come to mind?
Preeminent? So they have, well, social media is a platform, right? Twitter, I mean, you and I have been supporting each other. And I think about inside the enterprise, Chatter is a
Chatter,
big Chatter of sales, which is an enterprise secure social media type platform, right? But it's only inside the enterprise. And they've expanded that. So then you can have focus groups now. So you can actually have groups of people from maybe your customer segments into Chatter. So you're actually using this to communicate and collaborate that way. We think of, GoToMeeting as a vehicle, you know, for collaborating. You're seeing Citrix out there, you know, promoting it these days. Any number of other, you know, social apps that are out there. I'm trying to think of, I just got a vapor lock on a bunch of them too.
No problem at all. I mean, there's so many of them out there.
But
Chatter's working quite effectively for a lot of organizations.
So it's increasing. I mean, you should see, actually, they have product development teams programs now. They're a key example of how that's being used to collaborate internally. Microsoft was trying to do something. I think they have Live or Yammer. I think it's Yammer.
Yammer,
is what they call it.
Yeah. Yes.
That's kind of those types of things. But again, it's a tool. You have to change the culture to get people thinking about collaborating. And that's not necessarily all in place at this point. You know, a lot of more established organizations, B2B, that we've installed Chatter in that organization. And if the leaders don't embrace it, it doesn't get any traction. And then it just trickles down. It goes back to the leadership issue. Leaders have to lead the way. They have to demonstrate. They have to model what they want to be doing. And if they're modeling collaboration, it changes the game.
So what do you see as far as the future of sales, the salespeople? What type of training, what type of individuals will be entering the sales force
the future? The clarion call of sales, right?
Yes, absolutely. In the future, and what is going to happen to the overall profession with regard to some of the tools being used? What do you see if you looked out 5 years from now?
Yeah, it's
and it's really
question.
Difficult because if the two of us look back where we were 6 years ago sitting there up in Alpharetta, who would have thought?
Yeah, actually.
There's no way. Huh?
You know what? I think you said it in that your question was that it's professionalizing. It's truly becoming a professional profession. I'll speak for myself. When I was getting into the workforce, I entered into sales because I had the path of least resistance. All right. I didn't have any specific training or finance or anything else. Said, hey, well, I'll be a sales guy. Good. I think that world's changed. People are, we're seeing now, I think there's up to 10, maybe even 15 colleges in the United States that are offering a undergraduate program in sales profession. Whatever that, sales, MBA in sales or MB, BS in sales, which is a BS in sales program. No pun intended, I guess. And so we're starting to see the professionalization of it. I think also, you have to have, just to your point, you're going to have a lot of intellectual horsepower to play in the world of sales in the future. Because you as a salesperson, you touch all the parts in that organization from, internally accounts payable. I can't tell you the number of times I've been told I had to go be a bill collector for something that I sold.
Yeah, correct.
Or I have to make sure the implementation of my project goes well because it's my reputation and I sold the deal, right? And so you're going to touch all parts of the organization internally. So you're going to have that business acumen for your organization. And then you're also going to need to know, what drives the revenues for your customers and prospects. The complexity of the world today. Social media, how is that being used by customers or not? What are the latest applications and what's the next Facebook? What's the next LinkedIn or how do we leverage LinkedIn to do better customer service, customer support?
I think they, as far as the need for communication skills, both from our writing and also from a verbal perspective, are just going to accelerate more and more. One of the things I always do, Steve, I've been in Toastmasters now for the last 4 years. I'm advocating that everyone actually, you know, participates in Toastmasters and avails themselves of that opportunity to learn how to become better communicators.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of Toastmasters. Wonderful, wonderful organization. I haven't been there in years, so.
Right.
You're inspiring. Maybe I have to go back.
No, but the salespeople, they really have to up their game as far as what they're doing and their amount of knowledge and continue to learn. It's going to be a life learning process. They're not going to be able to just go out there, carry a proverbial bag, and at the end of the day, relax.
No, it's yeah.
Those days are long gone.
It's a 24/7 world that we live in, right? I mean, on the social media, you're socially connected, and I think that's where it's going to be coming in. I think communicating and also representing and having that knowledge. So, yeah.
So I was going to ask you, what are you looking for? How should people get in touch with you, Steve, as far as?
Well, first go to the Sales Influencer Radio Show. .com because
you'll
find all my contact information there. But also, you know, I'm on Twitter. I'm a Salesologist on Twitter. I have soon to be coming a website, Sales Execution. And I'll make sure I have that link up there.
Okay.
And you can reach me on my cell phone. I'm always available 24/7, as we said, 770-335-0141. And let me give you my email, one last item. Steve@Cadley, CADLEY.com.
Okay. Now, we're coming up to the close of the hour now, just a few more minutes here. And basically, what words of wisdom do you have for the salespeople out there and for the sales managers? Any leave-behinds?
I think it's really key is to do your research and... You know, as a salesperson, do your research. Research the heck out of your client. Know your products, that table stakes. But I think it's really knowing what might be the business drivers for your prospect. That's going to be the key part. And not just the person who might have called you or that you're calling into. Think about what's the business drivers for the CEO of that organization. Put yourself in their shoes and do the research. Think about what are some of the concerns that they have. That's, I think, key is, and I've heard it consistently, you got to do that research. You got to differentiate yourself from that perspective by having some kernels of something unique and different, and understanding some of the concerns they have. As a sales manager, you know, to counsel there, I would say is let your people fail. Don't save them. They are going to learn more from the mistakes that they make, particularly if you observe them making the mistakes, and be able to coach them and debrief them afterwards on after they've made the mistakes, because that's where the biggest learning goes.
And let them fail.
Let them fail.
Yes.
You know, identify, look for those coachable moments, i.e. when they are doing something wrong, and you watch them, let it crash and burn, because that's when the biggest learnings will happen. If you continue to support them or save them from themselves and their inexperience, they're never going to get any better. You know, it's sort of like, you know, if you saw your kid fall down when they're trying to walk and you always never let them fall down, they'll never learn to walk. That's exactly what we're doing here.
So what, again, it's kind of off the record, but or off the point, but what was your greatest failure ever in sales?
Oh.
Can you, a challenging opportunity, I should say, is perhaps the better way of.
There's so many.
Oh, really?
Well,
I want to share mine with you.
Okay? Well, so here, I was given a big presentation, and I, so the biggest mistake I ever made. So Joe Nachio. Joe Nachio was, you know, a leader at AT&T, went on to run Level 3, or
right.
Global, yeah, Level 3. He, back in the days, I was up in the Northeast, and I was taking him out for a meeting I was up in Westchester somewhere, I can't remember now, but I picked him up. He flew into LaGuardia, and so I got a rental car because my car was a jalopy at that time, and I got a white Taurus. Remember the old white Tauruses that all the rental car companies had? Parked it in that LaGuardia parking lot, you know, and just ran in, picked him up at the gate, and brought him out to the car. And I was so kind of nervous. Joe Nachio, president of the division at AT&T at this time, and he was known for being a hard ass. And I got out and I saw to where I parked my car was a sea of white Tauruses. And I was looking like, holy, and I was like, I couldn't remember where I was.
Yeah.
And I literally, there was probably close to 500 white Tauruses out there. And I had the key and I had the license tag on it. So I'm running up and down the aisles trying to get it. Not in time enough. Joe walked back into the airport and flew back.
Ooh, that hurt.
So that was, yeah, that was my first learning. Always be prepared and, yeah, know where the car is. So what's yours, Rob?
Well, my particular case, what happened is I was actually giving a demonstration at Eli Lilly. So I flew from Boston to Indianapolis. And I got there. I had a room full of people. And the equipment didn't work.
There you go.
So you don't know what it's like to go there, fly 1,000 or 1,500 miles or whatever it was, and giving a presentation to a major corporation, and the equipment doesn't work. It was really embarrassing. They were pretty good about it, however. They said, I said, this has never happened before. I was quite honest with them. And they invited me back. Went back there a second time, and we closed the sale. But it was quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think that
would happen today, though. I mean, because I think people's time are so crunched. I mean, to get an audience with a buying prospect is so hard these days. It's like gold. And so, I don't think that.
No, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I don't think it would.
No, so. No, absolutely not. Very, very challenging from that perspective. But it's been a lot of fun here. And anything else as far as other books, you have this Cracking the Sales Management Code. Anything else you recommend to our listeners?
I think that's a great sales management book and sales management methodology. I'm a big evangelist of the Miller-Hyman. It's a foundational model. Understanding the strategy of, putting an opportunity and making a deal happen. It's basic common language, and I think, other tools out there. Do your research. Use tools like InsideView, Hoover's. Whatever you can get your hands on, LinkedIn, Google searches are very, very powerful. Sometimes we forget those.
Good. Right. Well, it's been a real pleasure, Steve, having you on today. And again, we've come a long way in the last 6 years, actually, in the world of Twitter and social media and sales and what's actually going on. And God knows what's going to happen in the next 5 years. It's
absolutely.
Just absolutely incredible, the day-to-day changes that we're experiencing in the whole sales world.
Absolutely.
This is Jeff Sheehan from the Sales Influencer Radio Show, signing off. Thank you.
Thank you.